Hey, it's Rob. It was an amazing week of Survivor, and we had incredible podcasts with Christian Hubicki and Steven on the Know-It-Alls. Make sure you catch those as well. Plus, The Circle was back this week with an AI contestant. Taryn, Mike Bloom, and Puya broke down the first week of drops from The Circle and on Renap. Who did Sam Moore find for the big guest? Find out on this week's Rob and Akiva Need a Podcast, all right here on RHAP. We know reality TV.
Support for this podcast comes from our friends over at Hyundai, makers of the all-new Hyundai Tucson, where they question everything to create the best Tucson ever. To find out more, visit Hyundai.com. Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now, here's the guy who wants to know, how do you call it a deep dive if it's only an hour? I am Rob Cesternino. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Rob Has a Podcast. And it's been a week where we did it backwards. We talked to Mike Bloom on the feedback show first so we can get to our recap guest here today over the weekend. It's always a great pleasure when I get to talk to this man who is on everybody's short list of people you want to see come back and play again. He is the commissioner of the Rotten Coconuts Fantasy Football League from Survivor Ghost Island. Dominic Abate is here. Dom, how are you?
What's up, Rob?
How's it going?
How you doing?
It's
going well. I'm fairly certain that I got the invite to come on the podcast because all the good guests are at Hearts of Reality this weekend. So I was on the B list.
Yeah, why? Who's at Hearts of Reality?
The whole gang.
The whole gang's
there.
How come you're not there? I thought you went a couple of years ago, right?
I went a couple of years ago, but you should know that as a father and husband man,
yeah,
that you got to pick and choose your spots on when to go
people
places.
Say, Rob, are you going to go to this thing? My wife is going to something for 4 days.
I can't.
Fine. I'm lucky I'm getting to talk to you.
Right. Well, that's how I feel, right? Mm-hmm. You have to, like you said, you have to pick and choose when to ask permission to do things. And when if you do it right, you get to do things. I got to go to Las Vegas in October.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did see that. You went. Yeah. What was it? That was, I saw you were with Adam and Sarah, right?
Well, we didn't go originally for them. During COVID, we started this Survivor poker group.
Yeah.
We call it the Outbluff Club. Cal and myself and a bunch of our new friends.
Yes.
And we played during COVID over the course of the whole year. Like every Friday night, we'd play a tournament and we'd Zoom. Mm-hmm. And it became like this family. It was really cool. And then we decided once COVID ends, we have to actually meet in person. Mm-hmm. Which sounded at the time pretty crazy because talking to people on Zoom is not necessarily the same as meeting people in person, but it ended up being a huge success. No, there were no crazy people in the group. Everyone was very cool, very chill. We had a great 4 days, and it just so happened that Sarah, Adam.
Oh, they were there. They're not in in the poker group.
Right. Just Kellen and myself.
Got it.
Really are still in there, but it just was coincidental that there were some other survivors there that weekend. So nice added bonus.
Okay. Dom, between that and the Fantasy Football League, you bring together all the survivors.
I try to stay in the web without being too in people's face. Like if you want to kind of do what I'm into, great, but you don't have to see me everywhere like some other people. Mm-hmm. Rob, I just wanted to ask you too, because I do know you moved recently into your new home.
Yes, big moves.
Can you just give me a little, how's that going? How was the move? I know that's a big transition.
So I moved twice this year. Basically, I moved from California to North Carolina, and then I moved into an apartment. I moved from an apartment into the house. So the house is better than the apartment. It is a work in progress still. Like it's great. There's a lot of potential, but also it's like, has anybody seen this thing? Does anybody know where it is? I know we had it. We didn't throw it out. Where is it?
Rob, I'm in my house since 2004 and the same exact thing happens here.
Yeah.
This house is still a work in progress.
Yeah.
It's always going to be. That's the delight of being a homeowner.
Dom, I came to realization that I think the most frustrating experience that maybe one can have, you know, outside of like, you know, obvious horrible things, of the non-horrible things, that the probably next worst thing is to assemble the, you know, IKEA type furniture.
Oh, for sure.
And I have had basically every negative outcome possible, including like, I think they didn't send us a piece.
Right.
Yeah, yes. Like this cabinet is not flush, does not work. And then the worst one is I finished working it. And I put it together and I'm like, all right, honey, get in here. Come look at this. Look at this thing. Oh, I don't think I like it. Like, we worked a full day on this. What do you mean? You bought it. You picked it out.
These are very familiar feelings I'm getting as you say.
I didn't think it was going to look like this.
Right. Well, there was a huge picture of it. When we bought it, we saw what it looked like. I've done the same exact thing and even put a shelf on the wrong way.
Yeah.
And then didn't realize it till it was completed. And for me to switch that shelf back would mean I have to disassemble the entire thing. So I feel your pain. Yeah. I've been there. Anyway, I just want to congratulate you on your home.
Thank you very much.
We keep in touch, but we don't really, you know, entrench ourselves in each other's lives. So it's nice to catch up and see that everything's going well.
Well, I've missed you. I'm excited to get to catch up a little bit here today. And
it's so funny too, because it's like the football episode, right?
Mm-hmm.
Danny.
Yep.
And you know, we're going into our final regular season of Rotten Coconuts, which we're not going to talk about, but it's a nice coincidence that we have kind of the football episode.
You said the final regular season week or we're ending it after this year?
Nope. Oh, no. The week. Yeah. Oh, we can't. We're in this.
I missed it the year that we were away last year.
Right. And fantastic comeback you made because you didn't start the season too well.
No, but we'll see. I am on, you know.
You're on fire right now.
Well, no. I am on. I have a house of twigs that's going to get knocked over. But again, well, maybe we'll talk about that at the very end.
All
right. But anyway, Dom, everything is good by you. Everything.
Great. Okay. No complaints, you know, no complaints over here.
All right. Very interested to get your opinion on just all things Survivor 41. I know that you look at things like, you know, with a very analytical eye in terms of like the actual episodes, but also like the show overall. How have you been feeling with Survivor 41?
Well, I'd say it was nice to have the show back after missing it for a year.
Yes.
I think we had the expectation that this cast was going to be a more diverse group.
Yep.
And that's what we got. And fantastic that this has finally come to be. And it's like weird because there is like the way Deshaun explained it in the previous episode, it's like, it's just the timing of it all where it's like, you do have the game back. You're so happy that you have the game back, but there is also this other thing going on. Mm-hmm. So it's wild to see the whole thing kind of come together where you are seeing the gameplay again, but at the same time, the things that are going on in the real world are having an effect on the actual game itself. And I'm sure you guys have discussed this many times over the past week or two, but I just want to touch on it also is that, I thought, once again, that tribal council episode 2 weeks ago or two episodes ago was super important for not just the show, but for people. Like, I just feel like this, it's such a difficult thing for people to see kind of all those sides and all those perspectives. And for it to have happened the way it happened, I thought it was really powerful stuff. So I was really pleased with it. And that kind of led us into this next episode. And I think the season overall is a great cast. I think, you know, obviously I'm not a huge fan of all the little tricks and trinkets they throw in, yeah. even though it helped me in my own personal season. I think we prefer more social game than, you know, these odd little twists and mm-hmm. turns, but it is what it is. And you have to kind of just go with it. And, you know, you can't ever blame the cast for what is happening yeah. behind the scenes. You just, as a player, you have to just play with what you have. So it is what it is, but I'm enjoying the season. I think I had mentioned a week or two ago in a tweet how after Ricard pulled this move to get Shan out, how it was almost like for me personally, again, I'm not talking about me or my season, but I had this feeling like this is almost like the road I would have taken if I had gotten Wendell out at this point. And now I'm interested to see what happens to Ricard because it kind of yeah. could show what might have happened to me in the event that I had gotten that opportunity to take Wendell out earlier.
Okay, well, that's really fascinating. Can you just talk that through? So in your mind, that, and I'm not sure how far down that path you ultimately went in Ghost Island, but you know, that the, you know, obviously you didn't do that. So you must've felt like that there was like significant downside to do that. So in your mind, what was that downside and what did that look like?
Well, there's two things here because first, this season is sped up, right?
Yeah.
So it's feel like it's almost compressed. So to equate it to my season where Ricard got rid of Shan at what, seven
left? I think it was eight.
Well, actually, I would say eight would have been my move also.
Okay.
Because that was kind of a time where I think Kellen was still like, let's do something and mix it up. And I think I could have easily gotten everyone on board to take Wendell out.
If I recall, is that the family visit you guys had at eight?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I believe so. So I think that might have been an opportunity for me to do that. But again, for me, I was like, if I do this, I'm dead. So in the same way, Ricard doing that was a big risk for him to do that. And for me, I just didn't see a clear path without it. Like I needed the same way Xander says he wants to keep Ricarding as a meat shield. I felt like Wendell came off as this great athlete, super sociable. I'm like, they keep mentioning his name. The same with Shan, even the same with Ricard. People are all looking at these two players as monster threats in the game. So it's almost like you need that other person to take some of the heat off you. Otherwise, if that person's gone, you are the direct threat. Mm-hmm. And it's very difficult to navigate a game, which especially a game where you don't know what monkey wrench is going to get thrown at you. And can you navigate through it? It's very difficult to do. So you always kind of opt for the safe route and stick with the person you can trust, rely on. That'll help you bob and weave through the rest of the game. And the fact that Ricard had the kahunas to say, I'm good. I'm going to do this without you because mm-hmm. if I don't do it now, I might not have a second shot at this. I give him huge credit for that. And the fact that he's still in the game playing as well as he's playing, but it almost gives you like this Mike Holloway feeling like this, he has to win everything yeah. to get out of this thing alive. Otherwise he's dead.
So it's interesting to compare the two positions between, where you were or where Wendell was with Ricard, because I almost feel like that for Ricard, I feel like that it was less of a choice for him. It was like Shan was available and I think he might have had to do it because that you had the other alliance that Shan was in, the Black Alliance with that was four and it was eight. And if Ricard is aware of that and that four, and if he feels like that, okay, well, like this, I'm not going to be able to ever get around this four if I don't strike now. Then even if he felt like that, you know, I'm going to be in a very bad position. Like he may not have had any other move. Where I'm sure you had like lots of other different viable ways that either, well, I could get Wendell later, or I could get to the end and you know, and maybe I'll win the jury vote. So for Ricard, I think that like knowing what he knew, like I think that this might have been his only path.
Well, also, yeah, because first of all, Ricard is super smart. You could tell he's observing everything in the game. He's calculating. And I would say in comparison for me is that the Black Alliance of four seems like a much stronger, tighter, intelligent group than what I dealt with, where I kind of had like small factions breaking off and no one really knew what they wanted to do. So I could always maybe have had the opportunity to cling on to someone right. and devise a plan where you're right. He had to strike. And that's critical because like you said, if he didn't take that shot when he did, even if he's still in the game, he's easily number five, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
So,
well, that's interesting because yeah. we would be right here at the final five. I mean, I think that you would probably think that, Shan, Liana, Danny, and Deshaun probably are there. And I don't know, like, do you think that they even keep Ricard around this long? Like, even if Shan wanted to keep him as like an escape hatch, like I feel like that Danny and Deshaun probably want to get rid of him at some point, you know, that I think that do or die round would have definitely been they would have taken the shot on Ricard there.
Yeah, I agree with that. But then again, now you have this dilemma of like, if it, let's say it got down to the final five, the four Black Alliance and then Ricard on the outside. I mean, at this point, you got to be thinking, look, we want to do what we want to do culturally correct, but at some point you're going to have to kill each other anyway. So mm-hmm. maybe it's time to do something and maybe one or two of them use Ricard in a way to, you know, bring the game forward. But that's it's so difficult to try to figure that out. I'm actually really, I find it really interesting the way it did break itself up. Because I was curious if that four was going to stick it out to the end. And then you have this dilemma of you're here to play the game, or do you want to do what's kind of right in society right now to, you know, make a statement or prove a point of some kind? But this game of Survivor is, it's not designed for that,
yeah.
you know, to bring that baggage in. You have to be able to kill people at any given moment. So it's a really slippery slope. But in the end, yeah, the Ricard thing for me, it's just I am so invested in him and his path right now. I mean, we're going into the final episode.
Yeah.
But I mean, I would love to see how he pulls this out.
Do you think if you had to put a bet on Ricard, does it gets to the end or doesn't get to the end? What do you think?
I would say a lot of it's going to have to do with final four fire making,
mm-hmm.
you know, assuming that's still in play. I think it is.
Yeah.
Right.
Jeff, I mean, Jeff said that, although Jeff called it, what do you think of this? Jeff called it the, tiebreaker. He called it the tiebreaker.
Well, meaning what?
I guess somebody wins, immunity, like you did. And then you pick somebody to be safe. And now it's like, all right, well, obviously Wendell and Angela, you can't vote for each other. So you'll go into final four fire making.
Right, right, right. Yeah.
The tiebreaker.
Yeah. Well, a lot of it's going to have to do with final five immunity challenge. Yep. If he doesn't win, you got to assume he's gone. There's a lot to talk about with Xander as well. It's funny how I'm sure we're not seeing everything, but how is it possible that no one's talking about him and his idol at this point, right? I mean,
yeah.
So, it's weird because I remember that too. I remember having an idol for a lot of the game, and it was kind of public information. And in a typical, like from an outsider's point of view, people are like, why aren't you taking out the guy with the idol or at least flushing it? But there's always this thing where you kind of dangle the threat that you may be using it.
Yeah.
And so, then people are like, this might not work. Let's shoot for another target.
Dom, I don't know if you had a chance to listen to any of Danny's exit press this week.
Unfortunately, okay. Not.
So that's a question that myself and many others asked, including our league mate and your arch nemesis, Dalton Ross, but what about Xander? What about the idol? And Danny said in not so many words, they did not look at Xander as a serious person who they were very worried about.
So in other words, he'd be beatable in the final three.
Yes. Basically that's what Danny was saying. And again, this is only Danny's opinion.
Right.
That was why Danny felt like that people were not that worried about Xander's idol.
I feel I find that hard to believe. I mean, maybe just the edit is giving him a boost and he's looking better than he's really is out there, which could be possible. Maybe he's really disheveled and is, you know, kind of loosey goosey out there. But from what I see, he looks kind of calculated. He's defended himself, you know, successfully on a few occasions. It seems like he's been able to deflect attention on other people when maybe the target was originally on him. Physically, he seems like a threat a little bit, and he seems to be able to talk a decent game too. So I would kind of be a little worried about him, but who knows? You know, we don't see the big picture. I'm curious also about the Danny vote, why he went this week as well, because it seems to me like, again, I don't want to talk about my season, but I can only compare feelings to when I played, where it was almost similar to having a really nice person. And you're just telling yourself, I don't want to go up against this really nice person at the end because I'm going to have a tough time. So to me, like Danny, not to say he wasn't strategic and not to say he wasn't playing a great game, but there's just something about his, you know, his personality that seems very tough, like to beat.
Yeah.
You know, he just gives off a really kind way about himself. And I'm like, so when I see him being taken out, I think I heard earlier in the episode that Ricard was actually preferring to take Deshaun out, which makes sense to me also because Deshaun has a great way about himself also, but he seems more strategic out of the two. Mm-hmm. Or at least more capable of mixing things up like he did with the Erica thing at the end with Heather. So I'm curious if the decision to go with Danny was because of this factor of, you know, does he have this likability about him? That's going to be really tough to take him out in the end. And I apologize if you guys got the inside scoop on this already, so, and I'm repeating myself.
Yeah, that according to Danny, again, and you know, it's hard to ask the person who got voted out, like, well, why, what were the reasons why they voted you out? Because you know, he's not in those conversations. But a couple of factors that the biggest one for Danny was that Erica and Heather, that Erica and Heather were Deshaun's people. And Sydney was Danny's person. And so that it was Danny's job to like maintain the relationship with Sydney, who got taken out at the merge, whereas Deshaun had the better relationships with Erica and Sydney. And I think that they were sort of the people that decided which way to go. But I definitely think that a big part of it, like when you're talking about like from Ricard's perspective, which way do we want to go? Like, I think that Deshaun may at this point in time is the easier person to beat at the end, where I think that Danny can make like a very different, like if Danny was in the final three with Ricard, Ricard could talk about the things that he did, but Danny, I think, can make a case on like a whole different like level about like personal relationships and
absolutely
and like a different style of game, where I think Deshaun's case against Ricard would be like, well, I tried to do a lot of the same things as Ricard, but I didn't do them as well as Ricard.
Agreed. And Danny even has a little bit of like a Wendell subtleness to him. Mm-hmm. Like, in other words, those subtle little moves he did that you wouldn't think at the time is a big deal, but if you look at it from an outside view, you're like, "Why?" Well, like, for example, bringing the shell to Sebastian.
Right.
Those little things. So that's what I felt Danny had that would be a problem for someone at the end because of those little micro moments of, you know, whatever it may be, to create and develop these relationships throughout the entire game. And he's done phenomenal. I mean, and some people just have it in them. It's not like they're trying to do it. You know, this is the nature of their personality. They come off the way they come off. So you have to watch that. So I feel like Ricard's got his hands full with all of the people at the end of the game. Erica, I mean, maybe Heather is someone he doesn't really have to worry too much about. And no disrespect to her. She's doing her thing. She's having a great game. But I mean, from a player standpoint, I'd say everyone excluding Heather is going to give Ricard some trouble One way or another, there's something to talk about.
So, but your prediction, Ricard is in the final three or not?
I think he makes it.
Yeah. I think he's warming up to it.
I think he might pull out a immunity win. And I think he might even, I don't know if this is now like the standard where, let's say Ricard gets immunity at five. Well, I was going to say if he got it at five and four and then gave up the necklace and sat down. Is that like a thing now? You have to do that like Underwood did?
You might have to do it because especially Natalie Anderson didn't. And once Chris did it, it was sort of like she didn't even go in and make the fire. I've always maintained for you in that position, like nobody had ever thought of that before. And like that would have been like, it was Chris that got like the wait, hold on, galaxy brain. Credit there. You doing what? I've never said that, you know, like, you had to, you know, to invent that in on the spot. But for the players this season, I do feel like that the only shot after what Danny tells us about Xander that Xander has is Xander wins the final four, immunity and says, I have to take out Ricard.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting because it also might set precedence for like all games. I mean, Underwood doing it, obviously, and then Natalie not doing it is starting. It's not a sample size big enough to know if it is really that important of a factor to win this game. I think this season we're going to see, because the competition is so tough at the end, it almost feels like it has to happen, like you said, because no matter who's there, you could have gone all these days, played the greatest game, but if you take your foot off the gas when it, you know, when you're not supposed to at the very end, which is something that I did and it cost me, I mean, let that be a blueprint for you people. You know what I mean? Especially when you're going up against people that are going to give you a run for your money at the end of this game. So I forecast a scenario where Ricard is making fire.
Yeah. Does Xander send him there?
I don't know. Who the hell knows? Anything could happen in these last two challenges.
Yeah.
But also, here's a good question to ask, too. This is something I pondered after my season ended. And I remember talking about or writing it down somewhere that saying, I mean, it's a way bigger move to win Final Four Challenge and then take the necklace off.
Right.
And then sit down in the seat yourself. But before I realized the importance of doing that, my other alternative was at the Final Four Challenge, if you know you're one of the competitive people to possibly win the game, kind of intentionally lose the Final Four Challenge so that the person that does win it and realizes that they have to win the game is to take you out. Maybe they'll send you the same way I sent Wendell, right? I almost feel like me winning Final Four Challenge could have potentially cost me the game. Because if Wendell would have won the Final Four Challenge, he'd have sent me.
Yeah.
And then I would have gotten to perform and look like the hero. And maybe that would have been the difference. Maybe it wouldn't have. We don't know. You know, I don't necessarily think that's the case.
I mean, yeah, it's a game of, basically it's like, does one person change their mind because of that?
Right, right. Exactly. So, but that was something when I originally came out of the game, I thought about, I'm like, you know what, if for people playing in the future, maybe just like lose so that you have to be sent. But the real way to do it is to win and then show how tough you are. Take the necklace off, hand it to someone else and sit down in that seat yourself.
Okay. But, well, this is an interesting thing that you bring up because that will we get to the point where you say, okay, well, that's the blueprint. That's all you have to do. Will we get to ever see the person win the Final Four fire making and say, hey, all right, Ricard, you're the best player. Me versus you. Let's do this. And then lose. And then people will say, ooh, I didn't think of it that way. Yeah. Oh, you were safe. You were in there.
You have to. I mean, I was so confident in myself that I didn't need to do it, and yeah. it backfired. But, so I don't think anyone yeah. should ever be actually, that confident.
But it's so different that for, you know, for you versus say a Xander, where Danny's saying like Xander can't win. You know, people are don't take him seriously. It's almost like that, to go back to the football, it's like, you know, like, well, just like, you know, do the 2-point conversion. If you, once you're down by so much, like you're going right. to lose anyway. What do you have to right. lose if the other team takes over, at the 40-yard line? Who cares? You're about to lose the game anyway. So if you are in the position where you know that I cannot beat this person no matter what in the final three, my only shot is to do this, but that wasn't the case for you. It wasn't like, you know, you could see it like you felt like that, you know, Wendell might beat me in the final three, but I might beat him in the final three.
Yeah. But also think about a scenario where you feel so comfortable against like three other players, mm-hmm. right? Like let's say you win Final Four Immunity Challenge mm-hmm. and you're, and in your mind, like the other three people, like left in the game, none of them are going to beat me in Final Tribal. I got this. Can you now say, I'm keeping the necklace. You two go against each other in Final Fire.
Okay. Well, let's say last season, Tony wins the Final Four Immunity. Does Tony need to put himself into the fire and beat Natalie or Sarah?
I don't know. Yeah. That's a tough game. That was a tough season though. That's tough players. I feel like, yes. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I feel like maybe, that's a tough example because of the players are way more aggressive because mm-hmm. that's a returnee season, but I'm talking about a fresh season where you have players that are kind of new and you feel so good about your game that, and you're not really that confident in your fire making skills. Can you sit it out and let it happen? I mean, it's going to happen. And I believe that in other words, why I'm saying it is that I feel like the design of the game now is to not allow a solid player to be in the final four with three goats. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I feel yeah. like it's designed now that you're going to have at least one person that you have to go head to head with. Who's going to give you a run for your money? So you almost are going to have that dilemma where you have to make that decision at the end almost every time now. So I don't know. Right. You know,
see, I almost feel like that your season was like, oh, this is just how we dreamt it up. That two players with great cases are in the final three. And it's almost like, okay, even, you know, okay, you had, like where Angelina didn't get a lot of consideration from the jury. Okay. Nick and Mike, you had two viable, winner candidate. See, the final four, it's working because now you can't bring two people with no chance to the end, and we'll right. never have like these 10-0 blowouts. Chris did the flashy thing, and now all of a sudden Chris goes to the end with all due respect to, you know, to Gavin and to Julie, you know, I guess that's not really a blowout, but you know, where you know, Tommy is there with, you know, Lauren gets taken out and Tommy is right. there with Dean and Nora. And you could have a scenario where, you know, potentially now, you know, Ricard, you know, could get taken out at the final four and you could, you know, Xander, Erica, Heather.
Yeah, sure.
If Xander wins and takes out Ricard, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and I'll see. We have to see this next challenge. Mm-hmm. I feel like you always bring me in right before we're about to get all the goods to really see how it plays. But yeah, that's the point, right? That's why we're here, mm-hmm. To play out these hypotheticals. It's I don't know. Do you think that they're going to keep Final Four fire making here yes. to stay? Yes. It's not going anywhere,
not
right?
Going anywhere. Of any things that they could like think about changing, like I feel like that's not like that high on the list. Like I don't know what would have to happen where, you know, people would have to start gaming it where that they like vote. Well, we're voting out like the fan favorite at Final Five, and then they'll make up some other thing. Yeah. But you know, I feel that it's not even like on the like whiteboard of things that they would potentially change.
Let me ask you, do you believe that it is in there and not only in there to stay, but it was almost created to do what we're talking about, to create a scenario where you do have at least a minimum of two competitive players at the end?
I think that was the idea. And Jeff talked about that. He wanted to see, to be a way to sort of like help providers, get to the end. And right. I'm not sure, who that was like put in there specifically to help, but yeah, that they wanted to have basically like the two like people with like strong winner cases and really prevent, you know, you to go into the end with two people that don't have a chance. You know, I'm wondering if like going back to where Jeremy wins in a blowout and it's 10-0-0 and Adam wins and it's 10-0-0, and maybe they felt like that they want to really have it where, you know, you have that final tribal council with not that much drama because you have one like runaway favorite to right. win.
Yeah, because that really does make watching that final tribal jury deliberation kind of like, let's just get to it. Like, we already mm-hmm. know, but you're right. So now there's the scenario where there's people, two or more people fighting for their lives. And it did bring a more action packed element to listening to the deliberations at the end. And especially with the back and forth now, where you don't just like get reamed out by the jury, you get to, you know, bounce sometimes ideas, firing. Explain yourself. Yeah. The explanation part of it's good. As long as you really like, you have to, it's tough while you're up there explaining yourself for all the, your mishaps in the game. Sometimes you think that you're doing a good job in explaining this or apologizing for A.
Yeah.
When meanwhile, you're not even thinking about B or C, which is what they're really pissed about. You know what I mean? So that's a tough part of it, but it's good that the back and forth exists because it allows them to present B and C to you so that now you can try to get back in there and explain that next thing. But it's, yeah. I definitely like the way, yeah, it's much more action packed and exciting to watch as a viewer than to watch one person run away with it in that last 10, 15 minutes of the episode.
So when you're talking about the jury questioning, and obviously you went through the newer format of it, I've said that I think that that's one of the bigger problems with like how the winner has decided this big like final tribal council press conference, as opposed to I don't know if press conference is in the right term. But basically, it's like a scrum where, you know, like people are just shouting questions at you rather than being able to answer people's questions one on one. Do you think that that process is flawed, the way that they do the final tribal council questioning?
The way they do it now?
Now, yeah.
I mean, it's never going to be perfect, but I, as a player, if you feel strongly that you need to go back and kind of give the rundown of why so-and-so, you know, something happened, it gives you the opportunity to do that. But again, it can backfire on you if, for me specifically, again, not even to get into specific examples, but I remember thinking that I needed so strongly to discuss something, and realizing that it wasn't that at all, that certain people were, you know, upset about it. It was something completely different, something I wasn't even thinking about. So I prefer it over maybe the berating of just the players itself. Mm-hmm. But what do you think? What is your... So, your gripe with it?
Yeah. So, what I've said is that I feel like it leads to like more piling on of people, where I feel like that we get into a lot of like, yeah. And what did you even do? Yeah, that's right. What did you? Yeah, you didn't even do anything. I don't even know how to like answer this. Whereas I feel like with the one-on-one questioning, I feel like it's almost sort of like that you can like really like grade it of like, okay, here comes Seabass, and here's his question. It's like, can you solve the riddle of what he's trying to get from you? And you can win his vote. You could win, like, you could win the point in that spot. Whereas it's just like such a mess, no. And nobody understands what the three segments are.
I come back and I have to backtrack and agree with you. You're right. The reason why I was saying that the open format made more sense was because for some reason, I always remember the original format not really being the opportunity to explain yourself to people one-on-one, but I almost felt like you just had to sit there and take their shots and then just shut up and wait for the next person. Mm-hmm. But you're right. There was scenarios where someone would come in, say what they have to say, and then you can kind of respond and say, look, here's what happened. I apologize that it went this way. So yes, you can have more effect on one specific person in the jury that may have a gripe with you by doing it the way you're talking about. But sometimes it's also important to allow people to jump in the conversation if you think you're good enough to kind of rally the group by a response that you have to the kind of the group mentality or their issue. You know what I mean? So if four people are like, but you blah, 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 blah. Now you can be like, yes, but listen, let me tell you why. And even if you can change three out of four of their minds, you've done something good as opposed to a very specific issue that one person may have had. So it has its pros and cons.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Final tribal council.
Sure. But also you got to remember some of those one-on-ones don't really give the show enough.
Yeah.
You know, so when you have it open and sure, it might be an hour and a half of madness and there's a lot of nonsense, non-important conversations back and forth going on, but it gives Survivor the ability to pick and choose those good.
Right. From an editing perspective, I can understand.
And not only because it's good TV, but it actually may help explain the story better. Mm-hmm. It may actually help provide that storyline a little bit better. If you get some details as to what happened on day 16, let me tell you, wait, give me a second to mm-hmm. justify why I did blah, blah, blah. So I agree with you when it comes to maybe turning someone individually, having that one-on-one moment with them. But also I also like the idea of maybe trying to rally the troops into see from a group perspective, exactly what it is you're trying to do.
Dom, one of the things I wanted to ask you about was, you know, we've talked so much about Heather in this season. Where is Heather? Who is Heather? What's going on with Heather? Now, in your season, and I don't know if this is a fair comparison or not, that we had Angela, and there was a lot of like talk about what does Angela even want? Angela probably got, in fairness to Angela, more than played a bigger part at times in what was going on than Heather. Do you see any parallels there? And what is that like to this person was really there in the experience, but sort of like is very minimized in the retelling of the experience?
100%. I see parallels. Mm-hmm. And I would be baffled if Heather's not in the final three. Like that's almost written mm-hmm. in my mind. If it's not, it's the most ridiculous thing ever because that's just what you do when you have a Heather or an Angela on your season, that person is just there, mm-hmm. you know, like, and that's a perfect three. And that's when you choose who's going to who your final two is plus Heather. Right. That's what it comes down to because no one,
it's a lock, right?
Yeah. You want to just know that third person is not going to be a factor. It's just, you have one other person to battle, not two other people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If I could have had my way, it would have been myself, Laurel, and Angela. You know mm-hmm. what I mean?
Right.
Obviously. But,
and the final four firemen, did its job in that case. Like, they stopped you 100%. From, having, as far as the show is concerned, having, a very boring, final act that is you running away, that's not the show's purview to see that you, run away with it.
Right. It's done its thing. So, but as she's definitely sitting there as a piece.
Yeah.
That is just, fine. Not, she will go with whatever flow we tell her. But the similarities, I see it, right out of the gate. Mm-hmm. But there's a different sharpness to Heather, I think, than Angela. Angela, it's not only, I don't even know how to explain it, but Heather at least seems more in the moment. Even as the experience itself, especially with what happened in Tribal Council and the way she talked about it to Deshaun, how you know, she was unaware and she wants to hear the story more. Mm-hmm. Like that, even that right there shows me that she's more alert than Angela in my season was. And again, no disrespect, Ange, but
yeah,
you know, it is what it is.
So I guess like to tie this back to what we were talking about before with the Final Tribal Council, like, so obviously I don't think anybody is saying, like, you could argue like, hey, like the show should do a better job of telling Heather's story. I think that's a fair point, but that if Heather is a lock for the final three, and these people that are sort of like that have no chance, she won't get any votes, like are sort of like are going to go to the end. It seems like that this is what they were trying to address with the final four fire making. It has not changed that. Is there something that they can or should do to try to keep this person out of that they're trying so hard to get the best players into the final three? How do they do that?
Well, that's what their twists and tricks are all about, right? Mm-hmm.
but they've been ineffective to do, like solve the problem they're trying to solve.
Yeah. The problem is that if Survivor would prefer the more competitive players and leaving Heather out of the equation, the problem is that the players themselves want Heather in the equation.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So it's going to be really tough to break that off. So Survivor is going to have to create a scenario where there's no incentive to keep her around. Mm-hmm. And that's comes up to the creativity of the show and the Survivor gods and how that's put together. But there has to be, yeah, there has to be a situation where you say, man, I don't want to, because she's kind of in my pocket and easy. But to move forward, we have to cut it loose. So, I mean, I don't really know how you pull that off. Do you have something in mind? I'd love to hear.
And it's kind of half baked, but I've thought about this before, that could the jury have some say in taking out a piece that the jury either unanimously agrees on, we will never vote for this person. This person has no shot to win. Now, you'd hate to see it like used as like an offensive weapon of like, hey, we're, you know, I guess they're the jury, so it's not like that they, but if the jury feels so strongly that there's a person that does not deserve to be there, like, could the jury vote somebody out? At a certain point, is that maybe in lieu of Final Four fire making?
So you're saying that a whole new twist
have
is
an
coming.
Immunity, have Final Four immunity. But what if instead of fire making, the jury got to vote, like, who is the least worthy player of in the final three?
I think that there would be
more mad.
Complete outrage if that happened.
I don't know.
I'm not canceling it out.
It's a little crazy. It's a little crazy, but you're asking the jury who's about to vote for the winner of who, like, is there ever going to be a time where the jury would have voted somebody out the final four that actually would have gone on to win?
You're just taking away components of the game piece by piece, season by season. We cannot do this. Mm-hmm. We cannot do this, but you're right. It's almost like, are we at this point? Because it's so important to have the most powerful players at the end. You have to want, there's a fine line there, Rob. We got to mm-hmm. make sure mm-hmm. that the game still stays within the boundaries of, because that is, people will argue that that is a strategy to ride coattails. I mean, we've heard it a million times. And that, look, if I decided to play this under the radar game, you can't penalize me for that. You know, you don't have to vote for me for the million in the end, but this is my game. This is what I chose to do.
Yeah. Or, okay, let me give you I think this is a better, cleaner pitch. Okay.
Yeah,
so move final four fire making to final three fire making. Okay.
Okay.
So
what do you mean the final three fire making?
Okay.
The final three.
So you have a final four vote, have a regular final four vote. And it could be a tie. It could be a 2-2 tie. You could have a fire making at four.
Not the standard though. You have a regular vote
at four. And then at three, somebody wins immunity. The two losers make the fire. And then, you know, I guess it also like says like, what says that like the person who's going to be the better person? Like, what if you had like a sort of like a, you know, Butch from like he's somebody who's good at making the fire, but not necessarily like a strong candidate to win. But I don't know. I feel like
you know what it is though, Rob. It's I feel like there's, and again, this is from people who are not diehards but casuals in my circle.
Yes.
Who have said it almost seems sometimes that these twists and turns are coming into play so that specific people can be directed to make it to the end. We don't want that. Even if it's not the case, Rob, even if it's not actually happening, we don't even want the appearance that that's happening. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? We don't even want the appearance that we're making sure we can have very specific people in the end, because it feels like it's just taking the authenticity of the game mm-hmm. away. So if you're going to stick to a rule, give it a few seasons at least before we start pounding these new ideas and twists into it. All right,
fine. Leave it alone.
I'm boycotting.
But then I'm going to go back to what I said from, you know, for a couple of years of like the most dangerous player in the game is the Heather because they're taking up one of the spots in the final three.
I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
And she should be a threat and she should get voted out for that due to natural causes. Mm-hmm. You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying?
Yeah. And that being said, man, I am very much hoping I get to do a long interview with Heather and find out everything that was going on.
Yeah. And you know what? I saw something that Fishback tweeted or got in a conversation on Twitter about with someone regarding Erica.
Yes.
And saying how, you know, he doesn't think she's going to win just because it would be such a shame that she didn't really get this first woman in six seasons edit. You know what I mean? And that holds true to you too. Like, there's a lot of work to be done here.
Right. So, yeah. So Steven had said on the Know-It-Alls the other night that he felt like that he didn't think that Erica was going to win. And I think that some people were feeling like, well, why, like, what's wrong? What's wrong with Erica, Steven? And I think that he clarified, like he was talking about that. He did not think that there was enough in her edit that we've seen as opposed to
got some grief, right? It came off the wrong. Gotcha.
Right. Not to say that she could not win in a final three if we were there in the real time, that her case is fine, that he felt like that her case in the edit has been lacking.
Yeah.
I say it's drop the four, keep the one. What well, maybe yeah. like how do you know that you if you are going on, well, this is what they've done in the past, like well, like that and how did that work out with Chris Underwood?
Ah, exactly. And mm-hmm. also, yeah, and look how much action Underwood got.
You get
in
burned
the finale.
When you read the edit.
But I'm saying, look how much action Underwood got in the finale episode too, right? And this final episode is like 3 hours, I heard.
It's going to be 2 hours followed by what they're calling a 1 hour deep dive. That's what I was referencing at the top of the show. So it's going to be a 2 hour finale filmed in Fiji. The counting of the votes filmed in Fiji followed by a 1 hour quote unquote deep dive. Nobody knows what that looks like at recording of this podcast time.
Gotcha. Yeah, so a lot can happen in a 2 hour episode. And, you know, I would. Yeah, let's not assume. But Stephen brings up a good point. If she is the first female winner in six seasons, I think she should have gotten a little bit more juice. Deshaun, too, though. Deshaun had a monster edit this season. Mm-hmm. And why are we not discussing him?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like there's like you said, there's so much. The Xander, they all have cases to be made. Mm-hmm. And they all have really good stories, story edits. Deshaun, Xander, Ricard, those three right there have really solid edits. It would be amazing to see the three of them at the final three. It's not going to happen, but it'd be amazing to see them at the final three and have them really present their case. That would be mm-hmm. probably the greatest final trial we ever saw, but I don't see a scenario where that's happening.
Ricard, Xander, Deshaun?
Yeah. Like you said, they all have their own story. They all have great stories to tell.
With all due respect to Xander, that I feel like that if he gets his case has to be, I took out Ricard. I think that that's like if so, I almost feel that. Like that. Yeah, he needs. I almost feel like that Erica would be the more interesting third option because then I think that then The jury would, I think, then have to, you know, answer the question of like, okay, well, like, do we want to see, Erica as the woman winner to break this streak? Like, I think that right. that would make her, like an interesting candidate there in the final three, with Deshaun, who, certainly has allies, but also like, did he burn Shannon Liana too hard and felt like that, will they not want to go for him? I mean, Shan said, Ricard, you have my vote for $1 million.
Yeah, but that's a in the moment quote. You know what I mean?
I think Ricard actually, would still run away with that. I think maybe the interesting one is Deshaun, Erica, and Xander after taking out Ricard. So Xander that goes in. Yeah. And maybe and Erica and Heather somehow got voted out of five.
Yeah, it's odd because, like, as a fan of the show or just a fan of competition in general, you kind of want to see the person who's kicking the most ass win the prize. Mm-hmm. So, I would love to see a Ricard win. Also, because, like I said, I'm following him, like, vicariously through his own journey as if it was my journey. Yes. So I really want to see him pull it off. But you're right. I think the most competitive final three would be the three you just mentioned. Just because no one really has it locked up, right?
Yeah.
Out of those three, it could be anyone's game out of that final three, where if Ricard is sitting there, it most likely is going to go his way.
Dominic, speaking of Xander, this week we heard Xander, he was given a choice with Deshaun and with Erica about what reward would they want for this week. They had chicken and vegetables or... some candy, but it was they chose the chicken and the vegetables.
Xander candy.
Now, I know that you have recently, with the help of your great friend Wendell, that you constructed a medieval contraption to be able to grill meats and vegetables in over the fire pit. Is it safe to assume that you too would have chosen the Xander candy?
Yeah, because you don't want the quick high, right? Mm-hmm. You don't want to feel really good for 10 minutes and then crash and burn. So you want something that's going to give you a little more sustenance. So mm-hmm. I would agree with the chicken and broccoli. But so silly, those choices. Why are those the choices?
What would they have? What should have been out there?
I don't know. You don't even give them a carb. Give them a sweet potato.
A potato.
Why not? A potato.
Yeah.
What the hell was that?
Yeah.
It was so weird.
It's the hardest season ever. Yeah. Do you take any sort of responsibility for having the rice taken away from the survivors?
Why?
Well, I know it was not aired, but your season, correct me if I'm wrong, you had a rice negotiation that the David versus Goliath famously had a rice negotiation.
Angelina, right?
Yes, and it seemed like that the players broke the producers to the point where they said, that's it. You know what? No rice now.
I think the producers broke themselves. Okay. They gave us so much rice.
Yeah.
Like, they didn't have to give us two potato sacks.
And you went through it rice. All.
We were eating five times a day, five times a day, coffee cup mugs of rice five times a day.
Yeah.
Like, why? We didn't ask for that. Oh, we were happy to have it. So they go from giving you an 8,000 day supply of rice to no more. You're not getting any rice. That's
it, because you can't ration it. The survivors can't ration.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I like the idea that you can negotiate at any time. It's odd. Have they negotiated and we just haven't seen it? You know, it's a tighter season. It's crunched and compressed down to 26 days. You got to eat, man. You got to eat at some point.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I would guess that there was something, maybe. I don't know.
Dom, what was the negotiation on your season? What did you have to give up?
So we were definitely hurting. We were hungry. We still had a good amount of people left. I think this was right before the Dez vote. So I think it was 9 or 10 of us, something like that. Yeah. And so we said beforehand, Wendell and I were talking, and we asked the group, are you guys cool with it? And they were all like, eh, just leave it alone. You know, this is Survivor. This is what's supposed to happen. You're not really supposed to do this. And I was like, I'm going for it. So we went there and said, we're going to try to negotiate, see if it's even doable. And if he says, yeah, let's talk, we'll start super low. And basically, we said, Jeff, we're starving. We could use some more rice. He said, what are you offering? And I think we started because once you merge, everyone brings their gear from all their own camps. So we had three pots, three fishing, you know, we had so much paraphernalia that we're like, all right, we'll give up two of our pots and a machete. And he's like, you're out of your mind. No shot. And he came back and said, I want your shelter.
Okay.
We were at the challenge. I looked at Wendell. He looked at me and Wendell was like, absolutely, let's do this. And I was like, sure, we can rebuild a shelter. There's no problem at all. We got some smart people here. Long story short, while the challenge took place, we did the challenge. Wendell and I actually lost that reward challenge. So we had to go back to an empty camp.
Yeah.
And it was up to Wendell and myself and the few other folks that were with us to fix it. And, you know, long story short, Wendell said, Dom, you built the first shelter. Let me get a crack at it. And that's when I realized what a joke I was out there compared to this guy who literally whipped up the finest, the finest bed.
So it was so good that they just didn't even like put it in the show. Because
they hurt themselves.
They hurt themselves because then like if you were just watching, like nobody was like watching the show. Like what happened to their shelter? Why is the shelter gone?
Nobody knows. And they were the objective here was, all right, we're going to give you rice, but we're going to make you suffer. And instead, actually, our camp was better than originally. Mm-hmm. So it backfired on them. And that's probably one of the reasons why this negotiation thing is not working out so hot, because sometimes if you have really talented people out there, they're going to see that, damn it, there's nothing we can do that's really going to make it worthwhile. So let's just starve them to death. You know, drop the zero, whatever the saying is, whatever. So, So that's probably the thing. Wait, there was something else I wanted to talk to about this. Hold on. Yes. I have to just check my notes. I can't find it here. Oh, I saw, this is not even important. This was just something I was, when I was doing a rewatch.
Yes.
When, I guess, when Ricard, this is after the reward, this episode where Ricard, Danny and Heather were back at camp.
Yep.
That's when, Danny went to look for the idol. I don't know. There was just something about, seeing, they were lighting the fire with the coconut husk. And it's been 4 years since I've been out there. And because like for anyone that's played the Fiji era, you know, the new players who've played from what 33 on.
Yep.
I don't care who you are. If you watch those things and you see how the first thing you're going to burn to relight the fire is like the coconut husk and the colors of the, you know, cinematography, it's just so familiar. It's just so embedded in you from being out there that I could smell that fire. I know exactly how they're going to get it started. It's just, I don't know. It was something that I was thinking about because I just did a rewatch right before this podcast. So I was just literally sitting and drinking my coffee going, I know what that fire smells like right now. I don't know. Just a little side note for myself. Yeah. It was a nice moment, I guess. A nice moment for some people, I guess. Right. Mm-hmm. I had a good time out there. So for me, it was fine.
Since J&K Security Solutions opened in 1987, our attention to detail and customer service have been our strongest assets. I'm President Jeffrey Beckman. We'll always do our best to find the most efficient and cost-effective solution to every job we tackle. Whether it's security for your home or business, installing video surveillance, or being able to control your garage doors from your phone, we can help you feel empowered with simple and user-friendly technology. Let's work together to secure your home or business. JKSecurity.com.
For nearly four decades, J&K Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started J&K Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. J&K Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com.
Dom, I have some questions for you from the listeners of the podcast, and I have a voicemail for you from our friend Nathan in San Diego. Here's Nathan.
Hey, Dom, it's Nathan from San Diego. Great to see you on the show again. I have a question for you about this final five. So I think it's safe to say that no second place finisher has ever come closer to winning than you. And I'm wondering, with all these different players' games, what do they each have to do to eke out the win and come out on top? And is it too late for any of them to make that push? Looking forward to your thoughts, and I'm really looking forward to the next Off the Island with Dom and Wendt. Great first episode, man. Hope okay. The grill is going well, and enjoy the cooking.
Sorry, let me start with the end. So Off the Island with Dom and Wendt is what's called. It's a Wendt, not Wendell.
Dom and Wen Dom for and now, Wen. Okay. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. You built the fire pit at your house. What are there more adventures planned?
They're planned.
Yes.
If we could get scheduling down, then we'll be off and running.
Yes.
We're just doing a little fun side project. We're not looking to, you know, break anything. I'd say Wendell has a lot more other things going on in his real
yes,
life.
Yes.
So everything has to kind of fall into place. But we are having fun with this side project where it's really not going to have any. We're not boxing ourselves into any one specific thing. But we want to talk about. It could be one of many things. It could be a building project. It could be this. It could be that. But
you
also
could go bowling.
We could go bowling.
Yeah.
But I think what would really be good is to hear some perspective from past players, maybe now that we're off the island.
Yeah.
See what's going on in their lives.
Oh, you maybe, like visit somebody.
Yeah. Why not? Get in the car, go up and see Ethan in New Hampshire, whatever.
Hey, look, look, I got plenty of work you guys could be doing over here. Yeah.
But also just see what's going on. Maybe talk about what they think of the show itself. Maybe talk a little bit about how it affected you. A lot of people, again, I'm not looking to get deep and dark in
Do
this thing.
Do you smell the coconut husk when you watch?
Right. Things like that, you know? So we're not looking to go into this deep world. We want it to be fun and light. It's supposed to be fun. But I think there's some good fun content. Again, this has to line up scheduling wise. Right. So I wouldn't expect an episode every month, but we're hoping to put out maybe five or six episodes starting in 2022.
Can I pitch you on the next one?
Let's do it.
Okay. You guys reunite with Chris Noble. You get into the recording studio and the three of you drop a track at the end of the episode.
I think that's a fantastic idea.
Like Wendell, now he can you've seen him fix up people's homes. Now he's going to fix up what Chris else? Noble's rap.
What else can he do? Right. Mm-hmm. I think you'd have to get Noble on board with that one.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, sure. But look, that's the point. There's no parameters. You know, we can go anywhere we want with this thing because it's not a serious thing. So we can do whatever we want, go wherever we want and have fun with it. So yeah, we'll see if there's hopefully, and we do intend on there being some more episodes in 2022 Off the Island with Dom and Wendt. But let's go back to the question itself, which was, does anyone have,
what could each player do to make their case at the end from here on out? Maybe let's try to, like, what's the one thing that they could do?
Well, anyone other than Ricard has to take Ricard out.
Yeah.
But, right. Let's just start with that.
Well, I think starting with Ricard, that, you know, I didn't get to say what I thought was going to happen with Ricard, but I think that that there's going to be a second. They're going to this other island. I think it's going to be like in season 39, where they're going to go to some other island, and it's going to be a. And that was actually like a pretty exciting finale, season 39 finale. That they're going to go to some other island and have to do like a scavenger hunt, escape room type thing to find an idol or advantage. And I actually think that Ricard has the best shot to be the person to find, to like put, solve a puzzle and find an idol. So I think that Ricard might have like another out here of not just being able to win the immunity challenge, but also having, you know, a 1 in 5 chance to find this idol.
I agree. And I probably better than 1 in 5. I did forget that they are getting shipped off to another island, right? Yeah. So that they're going to basically start the episode probably over there. Mm-hmm. And yeah, they're going to have to do something that's going to be a combination of some type of endurance slash solve this mystery. Mm-hmm. And you're right. That's probably the most likely in Ricard's wheelhouse.
Yeah.
Even watching him do the immunity puzzle.
Amazing.
And this last one, not that he, but the puzzles themselves, I don't know if the viewers, I mean, I'm sure the viewers realize at this point, but as someone doing the puzzle, you cannot understand how frustrating it is that the letters are on both sides of the blocks. Mm-hmm. You just cannot, you look at it, there's just letters everywhere. You flip it over, there's more letters, and you have to just sit there and say, all right, get a grip. You know, and that doesn't just apply to the word puzzles, but also like the ones that have pictures on them. There's, you know, the image is on both sides. So it's so difficult to do it.
Can you practice for that, Dom?
I don't think you can. I mean, unless you create, you know, some type of puzzle like that is like, right, like Evie. Wendell has quite a few of his own little pocket puzzles that he brings with him. We were supposed to do some pocket. He wanted me to do some pocket puzzles when we did the first episode at my house. He's like, I got all these things. We should do them. I'm like, it's midnight. We're tired. We've been working all day. Maybe next time, you know? Mm-hmm. So if you're motivated, I mean, if you think you're getting on the show or you did get the call to go on the show, I mean, if you have time, get to work, because I realize the importance of being a visual, you know, having a visual play. You have to start seeing things like you possibly never have before. That was one of my biggest challenges out there. It's probably why I lost a lot of things, you know, competitive wise. I just didn't see things. And for Wendell, it was his thing. Like, he saw things that I wasn't seeing. So visually, if you're one of those great visual thinkers and see things in that way, it's going to be very effective for you.
Okay.
So for Ricard's, I think that's his thing. I think he's the one that sees things visually.
Get to 5, and then make a fire or win the challenge. Actually, so to go back to your earlier point, Ricard wins Final Four immunity challenge. Does Ricard need to put himself in and beat Deshaun in the fire making?
I think he might have to.
I disagree. I don't think he needs to do it.
If you're looking at like a checklist of things Ricard's done versus things Deshaun's done, you're right. Ricard is there. And even Deshaun having this truth bomb blow up, which was very Donathan like,
yes,
by the way, in this last one, right. Like an unnecessary truth bomb. Like, where are you going with this? You don't need to I think Xander even said in the booth, he's like, there was a kamikaze truth bomb. It was unnecessary. Kamikaze.
That was the name of the episode.
We don't need that. You didn't need that. So does Deshaun come off as like unaware? Is he doing more than he needs to? See, why I think Deshaun is going to be a major issue for Ricard is that even though Ricard beats him in the strategy game, and Deshaun kind of comes off as not a wishy-washy, but kind of on one side of the fence one episode and then another side of the fence the next episode, especially with his earlier game with Shan, right? Like, they're always having these great powwows, but then they're, you know, plotting against each other. So he comes off as like playing both sides occasionally.
Right.
But I just feel like his level of involvement in so many moments in the game kind of give him this presence, even if it's not as articulate as Ricard's game, you know, and clean. And like, I feel like Ricard's very decisive. He can explain his moves. People will see them and say, yes, I get it. And that's why, I mean, if I had to put my money on anyone, in the final three, Ricard versus Deshaun. But I don't think it's a slam dunk, is my point. I don't think it's a 10-0.
No, I don't think it's, it's eight for this season. Yeah, I could see maybe Deshaun, especially if like Erica, actually Erica and Heather have been closer to, I could see Ricard winning 8-0-0 if he gets to the end. If he got to the end, but I do think that Deshaun
in it.
I mean, Danny, I think, would vote for Deshaun, but, you know, I think that it would be, I don't know, it'd be hard for me to see, like, more than two votes for Deshaun if Ricard is there. Now, if it is Erica, Deshaun, Xander, or Erica, Deshaun, Heather, I definitely could see a scenario where Deshaun wins. I can't see how he beats Ricard.
Yeah, I don't think he beats Ricard. I just think it's not going to be as clean as everyone. In other words, out of everyone up there, I believe Deshaun is Ricard's biggest competition.
Yeah. So Deshaun, I think that the one thing he has to do is get out Ricard. Figure it out, Deshaun.
I think it's needs to be everyone's mission.
Deshaun, and for Xander, I think that he needs to make the fire against him. Deshaun probably needs to beat Ricard in the fire too.
Yeah. Yeah. That's gotta be anyone's game. That has to be anyone's game. Yeah. There's no other path for anyone sitting next to
Ricard. Everybody that their you know, clinch scenarios include get Ricard out of the game. And it would really help if you could be the person to do it, but get him out at five if you can.
Yeah. What effect do you think the fact that the game is crunched down to 26 days has had on this season? And especially as we're coming into the end game, like, was there an effect? Like, you're forced to make moves quicker. You're forced to do things quicker. Like, that's kind of like convoluted. Like, it's so important to like win that immunity challenge as a team in the beginning of the game and have that extra 2 days to kind of get your footing and establish yourself with the tribe. You don't have that this season. It's more of a mad scramble.
Yeah. My theory has been that I feel like that the game has been much more emotional this season. I think that the format has been, I'm not sure exactly what day they merged, day 13 or 14. I think that the post-merge game has been 2 day cycles instead of 3 day cycles. And then we had that one time, which just like in Ghost Island, where we split into the two groups and two people went out in 1 day. But other than that, it's been basically like 2 days, a reward challenge and then the immunity challenge on the second day. And I think that because of that faster format, I think that we have seen where people have an issue. There has not been as much time for things to calm down. Like, you know how it is. Like, you could have like an emotional vote and then it's different 3 days later as opposed to 2 days later. And really, and that second day, you're already getting into, you know, by the afternoon, who are we voting out tonight? So basically, you know, 40 hours after tribal council where something like very big happened, you know, it's time to vote somebody else out again, instead of it being, you know, 65 hours after the last tribal council.
Yeah, it's like equivalent to a news cycle in the real world, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if you give something 3 days to pass, people move on to the next story.
Yeah.
But if there's not enough time, you can keep that ball of fire going and just add gas to it. So it is, I think it had an effect on the season overall. But also, you have to bring the outside elements of the game as well. You're coming out of 2020.
Right.
You know, all the other stuff that's comes into play. This has to have probably been like one of the most jacked up seasons, even if it doesn't come off like that. Like, as a player playing with that much juice, you know, going into it and having to ramp things up quicker and quicker and quicker. I mention it because also, like, coming out of the game, you have this, you know, as someone who's played more than once, like that deflation time, like pull the plug and let the air out, kind of like let it go. And I feel like the juices are so much higher this season. And again, a lot of it having to do with the outside elements of what's been going on in the world, and then just going into it and then having to wait. You got to remember also, right? These guys had to do like quarantine for like 20 days before playing. That will get you jacked up as well. So I think it's really interesting. I can't wait to hear kind of that element of it after the game's over. And I would love to have conversation with someone and talk about like the whole roller coaster ride of casting and then getting postponed and then having to wait and then hearing about and getting on the show and then playing the game and the emotions of the game. And then even now where you stand, and has that, you know, plug been pulled and have you let that air out? Or a lot of people hold on to it. So I'm curious. This is the hard thing for me, Rob, when we go on topic of something in this podcast, but then like my own personal things of, you know, of my own experiences come into my head. And
that's what makes it a great conversation. Yeah,
it's interesting. But again, I like to compare, you know, obviously as someone who's played, you can compare your own experiences, but you got to also compare people who've played season 41 to someone who's played as early as you've played, you know, back in the day and how the game has changed.
When it was a game.
And when it was a real game.
When it was a real game.
What I want to know is when, every time they do this commercial, what is it, like a Kraft's Home commercial?
Consumer Cellular?
Why have they not had like the Rob Sesternino, Casey Kasem confessional
I think, first of all, I don't think they're going to, if they do anything that's standard def, I think it's going to be from Micronesia, Eric giving up the necklace, and I think that's it. I think standard def Survivor does not exist.
They got to pay tribute, man. They got to pay tribute. This is baloney.
I mean, what are they going to show? What are they going to show? At Consumer Cellular. Remember the remember the time when Jenna and Heidi took off their bathing suits?
Right. Woo!
Yeah.
But maybe that'll get the viewers back. Whatever. Anyways.
Yeah, get that. Jenna and Heidi gave up their clothes for chocolate and peanut butter. Give up your contract with the big cell phone.
By the
company.
Way, I was actually in that first one.
Oh, you were?
I was in it for a split second when Wendell got the check.
Right? Wendell, yeah.
And you saw me. I was sitting there all distressed.
Right, right.
Anyways.
So, yeah, hopefully they'll do mine for the finale.
They should definitely do yours. This is nonsense.
Okay. So, at the finale, Dom, we are going to see Jeff reading votes at the final tribal council.
Yeah, run this by for me. I need to hear this.
For the first time since Ghost Island, when Jeff said, hey, I'm gonna count the votes right here. And, of course, that was the 5-5 votes. He did not count the tiebreaker vote in Fiji, but he probably could have, right?
He didn't have to.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it would have been fine.
It would have been fine. but it was a big pop in the room when he came in with the one tiebreaker vote.
It was a huge pop.
Big ovation. Big ovation. Okay. So Edward Morris wants to know, with this finale, the votes are read on the island. What's that feeling like, Dom, of Jeff reading the votes on location? When Jeff says, I'm going to read the votes now, did you know instantly it was going to be a tie?
I think it took about 10 seconds.
Okay.
Because first we're trying, like, the thing is, like, the reason why it wasn't immediate is because to us, the final four fire making was a new addition. Yeah. Even though it happened in 35, we didn't, you know, we never experienced it.
But they told you it was coming, right?
Yeah. So we're thinking, oh, maybe this is a new something that they're adding to it. But then, once you see Dom Wendell, then, so I think after the fourth vote, it was official in my mind. And then I think by the eighth vote, which was only 20 seconds later, it was official that I had lost. But let me ask you this though. How, does the cast know that the votes are being read this season ahead of time?
I am not sure. I suspect, that they
probably find out right before the final tribal. Like, look, we're going to do something and here's why we have to do it. And then there's probably this long talk about why, if anyone says anything at any point, you know, whatever it may
be. I wonder if they might give that to them before the start of the season. I think they had to have known that they're doing this because, and the reason, of course, is probably because they felt like that, like, well, what if we can't get back together? We don't want Jeff to read their votes in the garage again. So let's do it here. You know, it'll be interesting to see if we get like the reaction from the cast or if it was something that they knew from, because I had speculated over the summer that they might end up having to do this.
I did remember hearing you or even talking to you about it maybe last year or something. Yeah. It's weird because it's not a big audience, right? It's like just the jury. But I mean, they're pretty good with their music, right? They'll give it this big hoorah. But I
mean, why not? I mean, it's like every cast pretty much knows who the winner is going to be when they walk out of that final tribal council. I mean,
I think it should be the way to do it moving forward. So wait, let me ask you a question though. Is the deep dive?
Yeah.
Hour after, is that in today's time or is that deep dive? What took place on, like, in other
we
words,
don't know.
Is the
we don't know
if the deep dive is on the island.
I suspect we will find out more in the couple of days leading up to the finale, but there are rumors that they filmed something in Fiji, but
it might
I don't,
be a hybrid of both, maybe,
yeah.
Right?
Like, I kind of feel like that whatever you filmed in Fiji, like, throw that out. Like, it's like, you don't like, and maybe you feel differently, but I kind of feel like that the way you feel about the thing, like 2 days after the season, I don't know if that's necessarily like, as valuable as the stuff now, but maybe I'm totally wrong on this.
No, you're right. No, the perspective of it after is a completely different thing. Right. So in the moment you have these feelings and all this, and you can say something in that moment, but once you get to step back, absorb it. It's, in other words, neither way is right or neither way is wrong. It's interesting to see people's takes on the experience right there. So doing a deep dive right after the votes are read in Fiji would be great to hear, but it would also be great to hear the perspectives of the players.
Yeah.
6 or 9 months later and see how they kind of, you know, fall into place or if they're even the same, or because 90% of the time you're thinking some way right then and there. But when you watch the finale reunion show, everyone, all of a sudden everyone gets tough. Nah, yeah. You know, whatever it is. So, and again, I think a lot of it has to do with people who've seen their season and perhaps don't feel like they've come off great. Right. Yeah. So now at the reunion show, this is their chance to redeem themselves and show, look, you know, whatever it may be, you've seen it a million times. I think it's important to, I guess it's important to do both, but I think the more authentic is what you'll get on the island.
Yeah.
But no, because I want to hear everyone's thoughts on it.
I think that you're right. I think we'll probably see if they did film something there. I think that they have to also include a piece of, because so much of the reunion show is like, all right, what's been the reaction? Well, what are the people on the street saying? And especially when we have like all of these like big social issues discussed in the season.
Right.
I think you have to like what's been the reaction? Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, you're not going to get in today's time. You're not going to get the whole cast for sure. Mm-hmm. You're going to get the key players of the season. Probably mostly, guaranteed the jury, but maybe you'll get one or two more big characters involved, I would guess.
But I don't know. Did they send the jury home? Like, I or the pre-jury home? Like, I don't know if they were on location still, like, at the end of this thing.
But I feel like getting the perspective of the people who went out super early might be kind of a waste of time. And yeah. I don't mean disrespect, because I feel like anyone that's done the experience of playing Survivor, like, even if you've been booted first, it's still, you still get to say, oh, I went to LA for the finale and I had this great experience and I was treated on the red carpet like I was someone important and special. And I feel terrible for anyone that doesn't get to experience that, because the entire package from getting your first call that you made the show to the finale show, the whole thing is an experience that can never be replaced. It's so important. It was so good. So I do feel bad if they're not doing that format anymore, because the whole thing is great. But if we're not doing it anymore and giving everyone that moment, I feel like if you're only going to crunch in this hour of deep dive, let's get to the meat and potatoes, right? Let's not get everyone's
candy, if you will.
Yeah. You know what I mean? And I think they realize that now, too. I think it's important to, especially with this season and what's been going on culturally, you don't want to leave that out. You want to leave enough room and time in there for that. So let's package and condense it.
An hour is a long time for the quote unquote deep dive that I'm pretty sure the Ghost Island finale, Ghost Island reunion show, if you look on Paramount Plus, I feel like it's like 18 minutes.
Oh, okay.
It's like, yeah. I think
it only was 30 minutes typically after the reunion show, wasn't it?
It used to be an hour. And then Survivor would like wrap up around 10 and then we'd have like the longer finale. But like over the years, it's like the Christmas creep of the finale goes right. like,
stealing our time
till like 10:30.
What did you have? Brian Gumbel or something?
No, it was Jeff.
You had Jeff for your reunion?
Yeah, he did. The first one was Thailand, and then the second one he ever did was ours.
Gotcha.
So, but we'll see. It'll definitely be interesting coming up with this deep dive following the show.
Yeah. And also, is it going to set the precedence? I guess it depends on, vaccination require all that other stuff.
I think they prefer to do it like the way that they had done it for, 20 years.
Because that's a big night. Yeah. So you're saying if pandemic goes away tomorrow, you think maybe we get back in the studio and do it the old way?
I think so. I think that if things were, Omicron turns out like not that turns out, you know, hey, like, you know, it's not that bad. And again, this is I'm putting in best case scenario.
I understand.
Then things are sort of like normal-ish for season 43. I think that they would have a real decision on their hands of like, well, I don't know. Do we film the ending here or do we?
Because you're in fear that something could make a U-turn at any point.
It'll be
you're
March, assuming that they can get back to Fiji and they get back on the normal production schedule. Like that decision is only a couple months away.
Yeah. I see what you're saying. Okay. I think they're going to need a few cycles in the clear before they decide to go back to that.
I suspect they stay on this track for 43 and 44.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Okay. Mike Scally wants to know, or Mike Scall wants to know, which new game element did you like the most least? And Dal, I thought this was a really good question for you because I really respect your opinion in terms of probabilities and odds. I know you're a big poker player and you really have a very good sense of this stuff. So what do you think about the shot in the dark first? Was that a good play for the survivors? Well,
in what terms? Like, is it good to play it as a player who thinks they're going to be eliminated?
Did you like having that as an option for the players, both as a viewer and as a player?
I think pre-merge, it makes sense to have it because as someone who just got out there and you hear your name out and you're like, damn it. Like I worked so hard to get on this island. I can't possibly, my game can't possibly be over already. You know, and I think, for a pre-merge standpoint, I think it gives, someone the opportunity to take a crack at it, knowing you have no shot. You could hear the writings on the wall. Everyone's saying it's you. Yes. But I think as the game cultivates itself and becomes more story ridden and you see now where we're at in the game and the players matter and the actions of the players really matter. I think I don't love the concept. Okay. But it's fun to do it pre-merge, but towards the end, I would have preferred not to see it. Sydney used it. Anyone besides Sydney use it?
No. Only came out the one time.
So her using it, it hurt her, right? In other words, she would not have gone home if she didn't use it?
She would have potentially forced a tie, I think, that the group could have gone after Evie. I think it was a 5-4-3 vote, 5 votes on Sydney, that she could have gotten a 5th vote onto Evie.
Well, so, I mean, it obviously had an effect on the game then, right?
I believe so. Although, I feel like
we don't know.
Deshaun used his, two vote. Yeah. Okay. I think that is correct.
So, okay. So it had an effect on the game. But I tell you, I'd love to see Sydney play a little longer because she seemed like she was a pistol mm-hmm. and would have mm-hmm. mixed things up nicely.
Yeah.
Like I said, I'm one of the people who prefer the old less, you know, I prefer more people to people gameplay yeah. than, you know, in other words, I hate to see when a person or a group of people works so hard to make things happen and put the time and energy in, and then to see all of it go for nothing because of this silly element that's just been thrown into the game. Mm-hmm. I also say that I have no problem with twists and turns in the game as long as they're presented to the cast ahead of time.
Yeah.
So as long as at the beginning of the season, we realize that these things are in play, you have to now navigate your game based on the fact that these elements are in the game. Right. Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, I prefer less items yeah. and I prefer more people play, more interaction and social game. But I also admire people who see that there's these elements, know how to take advantage of those elements and use them to increase their own game and, mm-hmm. and send themselves. So it can develop great players or it can hurt the game. And I think in this season, when you have really smart, strategic people who realize what the rules are and they're able to use those rules to advance their own game, then I appreciate it. And yeah, that could even go back to the idol, right? In the beginning, this idol, what the hell is this idol? Why are we doing idols? Let's just get back to the, but for me, right? Okay. I found a fake idol and I had to do something with it. And at final six, I was able to take this fake thing and give the perception to the people that it was a real thing. And it allowed me to advance one step closer to the end game. So if you have scenarios like that where people are doing things with these bonus items, then it's fun to watch. But if they're just out there for the sake of being out there and they're not really being utilized in a way that's going to make the show more creative, then I'm not for it. But okay. I guess that you can't be on both sides of the fence here, right? You either have to love it or not.
Yeah. What about do or die? How did you feel about that last week?
I didn't love it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't love it.
It can die.
Yeah, it can definitely die.
Yeah.
Right? But where do you stand, Rob? You know, I always like to ask
going back to and the shot in the dark, I've actually liked this season. I felt like that it really incentivized people to blindside different players. And I think that a lot of times that like caused a lot of chaos and panic with the voters because yeah. that then when like if somebody was on the bottom and it was like, well, they're voting for me is like I don't want to be the person who then gets, you know, once they're immune and then somebody's putting a vote on me because of the do or die.
Right.
So I think that
created more scenarios
and outs for people that were potentially going to be like because I think that for the show, the worst thing that could happen is like, well, it's an open and shut 5-1 vote. And so we have a really lame episode this week. But now
okay.
the shot in the dark. I think it was helpful.
And it created a new element, right?
Right.
Now, right. You have to have a backup plan in the event that this person does roll successfully. What's our next game plan? And now in having that discussion, new names are coming
right,
up
and people
which
are getting
is creating more right.
spooked. And so I think it did more good than bad. I think the shot in the dark.
I can agree with that now. Okay. Now that you lay it out see, that's why I have to ask your perspective because I'm not like rewatching these episodes mm-hmm. all season. So I don't remember the rules. And I remember being confused by the rules of the shot in the dark. And after one person uses it, does it still like, does it change? Do the odds change yeah. for players? I didn't know that. And I think I was they, like, let's just yeah, get
they
rid
should
of this
let
thing.
Them change. Like that.
They I should.
Yeah. Why not?
Should it go? What do you mean? Should it go from 1-6 to yeah. 1-5?
It's like,
now?
Well, now, and Jeff could say, like, and I have to remind you, last time Sydney pulled a shot right. in the dark. So the odds are now 1-5.
Five.
That safety thing is in there. So think about that if you're on the bottom.
That'd be that creates even more of a potential threat that your plan will not work, which will now create more chaos, which is great. You're right. That element, the way you just presented it, does make sense to me to keep the episodes from being obvious, right?
Right, right.
Yeah.
Okay. Then you have the do or die. I felt like that, going back to what you said about, I like it if the players have the information. The thing that I liked about it was that you had the option. Like, do I want to go in on this, or do I want to be out on this? And so, because it wasn't like a mandatory, like, oh, by the way, today, whoever's out of our challenge first is going to be the person who goes home. It's like, wait, what? So because you can opt in, like, I think that eat or compete has sort of like lost its juice. Like, who cares if you sit out of the challenge? Well, I guess you feel safe enough to eat, but this is almost like the opposite. It's like, hey, if you're desperate enough to be playing in immunity, you probably have a very good shot that you are going to be the person to go home. And I wonder if we could see players like trying to use this more like offensively of like, hey, like I'll take the, you know, the 1 in 3 shot, or even better than that, if I play the odds correctly on the Monty Hall problem. And, you know, I have a better chance of getting through that than I do of getting through this vote without immunity.
Yes. And you know what? I did forget. You just reminded me that it was by choice.
Yeah.
That if you want to opt to do the challenge, but also wasn't it that no one knew who was going to, like, they were given rocks.
You didn't know if you were going to, who else.
No. So I know I'm saying, but yeah, you didn't, like, everyone just flipped their hand up and then presented it right
at the same
then
time. Yeah.
There was no discussion. It wasn't like, right, are you competing?
Right.
So nobody knew. So that's a multi-layer dilemma, yeah, right? Yeah. You gotta, who's going to say yes to it? Who's going to say no? Can I beat that person? Can I not beat that person? So that definitely created quite a mix.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, they did have the information ahead of time, so they can make that decision ahead of time. It was not a big, it was a surprise in the moment, but they got a few minutes to really think about what they wanted to do. So that makes it fair. That makes it fair. And that's what makes, that's where like a good chess player will decide, all right, I have to make this decision right now. If I do this, you know, is it going to work out for me? I think Liana opted out, right? Saying, I haven't won a challenge yet. I can't imagine I'm going to.
And
I don't want to take
it. It's ironic that she went home, because she wasn't somebody who I think people were gunning for. It just so happened that the scenario of Danny winning immunity, and then right, Deshaun being the person who ended up getting the do or die, and being like three different bad things had to happen for her, for the right, two guys that were more likely to go home than she was, to end up being the people that go home.
Right. The stars were aligned in a negative
target
way.
On that.
Yeah. Right. She wasn't right. Yes.
Yeah, and so even if she did play, chances are she would not have been out sooner than Deshaun, who was out almost instantly. And so she still would have been up for elimination and still would have gone home. So it really didn't change the equation for her.
Oh, I did that challenge.
You did.
That was
Wendell. Wendell had two shots at it, and then also
He had that Malcolm advantage, right?
Well, he went on the family visit. He went to go. He gave up the visit with his dad and went to go get the advantage.
Thanks for reminding me that. Yes.
What, that was that's a bad memory for you?
No. I meant seriously. Like I
thought you were being sarcastic.
I forgot the series of events.
Yeah.
That took place there. Yeah. So that was interesting, and I think if they do that moving forward, I think that the show realizes that that moment created a really tough decision element, like, you know, this dilemma to do or not to do. I think is they're going to find it that it was positive for the show.
Yeah.
And I think you're going to see a lot more of those scenarios moving forward.
One of the things I said last week was that I felt like that was a bad challenge to do or die, because, and I've never done that challenge, but it's not like a challenge where like go back to the challenge that like you and that you won when the tribes went down to 5 and you and Wendell were like really in like a test of wills to, you know, hold on for dear life. Like that challenge, you're just holding the thing. And it's like, you don't necessarily lose because you gave up, right? It's just like you lose because the thing just fell.
Yeah, it's. I mean, it is still a test of will, but it's there's like a lot more
technique folk. Could really yeah, very, screw
yeah,
you up.
Yeah, right. I agree. It should have been something where you're standing on a pole or something mm-hmm. along those lines. You're like, I made this decision. Now I got to pay for it. And I'm going to stay out here as right. long as I possibly can. Where the other thing, it's like, yeah, the slightest slip up, the whole thing could come apart on you. So I agree. I think if they are going to do that moving forward, yeah, they should have something where it's in your court now. It's up to you mm-hmm. to really decide. You made this decision to be here. Can you yeah. hold out? I'm surprised that we didn't see more. Remember, what season was it where they were kind of like in a squat position holding the racks?
Oh, was it 39?
I think it might have been. I just remember seeing that and being like, that is got to be the most uncomfortable position you can put someone in. And to see that, like, if you're, this is where your will really matters. So I like those. Those are the fun ones to watch. Even the one where Wendell and I holding this bicep curl position to keep this ball locked. I was dying, but I'm like, nope, I'm not going anywhere. Yeah. You know what I mean? So those are fun because that's a moment in the game where the player themselves get to really make the decision mm-hmm. for themselves, right? As opposed to an outside force creating this scenario where, what do I do? This is up to you now. You're here. Show us that you can make this happen.
Yeah.
On here. I got a little pop up here. Okay. So I guess it's a nice mix, right? If you can have the perfect blend of, you know, having to make this wild decision, but also having those challenges in there to show that everything is not designed by the Survivor team to give at least the perception that they want things to go one way or another. Let it be up to the players at least a couple of times throughout the season to really have to grit it out, you know, really put their sweat into it and see if they can go the distance, because that shows like this big triumphant moment for that player. And, you know, oh, Jeff, I've been waiting for this moment for you to put that necklace around my neck. And you feel like you've earned it. I know I can relate. I remember beating Wendell and saying, this was my moment. Yes. So those are good. I think they're good moments for the show.
Yeah. All right. Let's do the little rapid fire. Okay. You tell me, let's do like a sort of like a Kendall Roy limo, good twist, bad twist. Okay. All right. Okay. How about Shipwheel Island, the prisoner's dilemma, good twist, bad twist.
I guess good twist. Those are from earlier in the season, and I don't remember them, so I don't want to kill you with that. I remember sometimes it helped people, sometimes it didn't. Sorry.
Yep. Knowledge is power.
Terrible.
Bad twist.
That was Liana's, right?
Yes.
Can we? Does this have to be really rapid fire?
I mean, you can talk about it. Go for it.
Remind me.
So that she got the advantage that she could steal another player's idol or advantage. She had to ask them if they had it at tribal council. If they had it, they had to give it to her.
See, originally I hated it because I am in the camp of, if you did the work, you went out in the middle of the night, found the idol, and now someone can just take it out of your hands. Hated that. But in this case, it was fun because it backfired on Liana, and we got a nice little present at the end to see how Xander was able to outsmart her. Mm-hmm. So again, mix. Originally, I would have said, I hate that because you have to earn that idol. You don't get to just steal it out of someone's hands. But at the end, I ended up enjoying it. So I hate being this guy who sits on both sides of the fence all the time, Rob, but
yeah.
That's where I find myself occasionally.
And then how about the hourglass?
That was
smash the hourglass, Erica. And she got to switch the six people that were safe.
Yeah, that I had an idea for some similar thing that I sent the production people. I called it the Mulligan advantage.
Oh wait, you invented this?
I didn't invent this, okay. But it's like a third arm. It's like one of these parallels to this Mulligan advantage, where my idea was, if you find the Mulligan advantage and you feel that you're not doing well with your tribe. This is a pre-merge thing, right? So pre-merge, you don't feel good. You're not getting along with your tribe. you know you're probably next to go, you find the mulligan advantage. You're now on your way to an immunity challenge. And Jeff's like, all right, here's the game. Here's what we're doing. But Jeff, wait, I have the mulligan advantage.
Yes.
Jeff is now forced to to mix up, and everyone has to re-pull, their new buff and see what new tribe they're on. In other words, you're reshuffling the two original tribes.
So you can force a tribe swap.
Forcing a tribe swap, which you know is going to happen anyway. So why not let the player determine when it happens?
Oh, interesting.
And it has to happen by a certain time, right? Obviously, because you can't be the person who's, running the storyline of the show. So you have three opportunities. And sometime in the next three challenges, you can play the mulligan advantage where you get to mix things up and, give yourself the opportunity to change change where you are in this game. I thought that was a good idea. They obviously didn't like it, but we have something kind of similar.
Can I weigh in on that? I feel like that. I think it would be hard for the production to give that much control to the player. Like might have like so much story going on where that they might like the other player doesn't necessarily like have like a whole like a holistic view of like what's happening on the season. I like that if you wanted like this player can swap to the other tribe anytime they want, but to reshuffle. Seems like a lot of power to give to like one person on the
only reason why I say a full swap is because how much are you improving your game?
Yeah.
By going from one, like just swapping one player for one player.
Mm-hmm.
Unless that would work if the opposing tribe is crushing every challenge, right?
Yeah.
If that's the case, then
production should hit the mulligan. they just like, all right, tribe swap today.
But I thought, these are just things that just,
thoughts,
thoughts that come in and out of your head. And you're like, oh, you throw it out to someone you might know in the production world and see what they say. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so for Erica to have the decision to decide who won versus who lost, that's why it felt familiar to me, almost like you're switching the outcome of what had taken place. And again, I've said it multiple times this podcast. I feel like if you've earned the win, you deserve the win, right? So to take that out of someone's hands, it just felt a little bit dirty, a little bit icky. Okay. I didn't love it.
You know, Dom, this week on the show, Danny said that they had the shot to vote out Ricard at the final seven. They didn't. He said that was like having the chance to knock out Tom Brady and then and not doing it and then having him go on to then, win
the Super Bowl.
Yeah, win Super Bowls.
Great analogy.
Yeah, which it really struck a chord for me because, that Tom Brady has been, a thorn in my side for 20 years.
Sure.
Yeah.
I had a thought on that.
The Tom Brady advantage?
No. but you know what was interesting? One thing I noticed on my rewatch just now was, and again, we already talked about how well a game Ricard is playing, but in the discussion at Tribal Council, when Danny was talking about that moment, he was just doing Ricard's work for him,
mm-hmm.
like talking up, calling him the Tom Brady of the game. And Ricard's just sitting there with like, perfectly humble, a little smirk on his face.
Yeah.
But that's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to shut up and let other people do the work for you. So I thought that was really interesting that he's like basically saying this, but I guess in the same way that Deshaun had this big truth bomb moment, I think it was important that Danny, who knew there was a very good chance he was going home. This is his last opportunity to show the rest of the people in the game. You guys are dumb.
Mm-hmm.
You have this player, you had your shot and you took the wrong shot. And I want to be on record for saying that you blundered in this moment
mm-hmm.
and I hope you're happy with yourselves.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So, and again, the Tom Brady analogy is great, but it also gives Ricard this Tom Brady-esque, aura of, and he doesn't have to say a word. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Keep talking about how great I am, Danny. I appreciate it. Cause when I'm in the end, I don't have to say much.
I really like how Danny said that. He said, I wanted to vote out Ricard. These people over here, they woke up today. They woke up today and said, we're going to beat this man today.
Right.
No, no, you're not. So I thought that was very funny. Who was who was Danny referencing, the Saints last year? Who was it that had the shot to take out the, Tom Brady and didn't, and then he won the Super Bowl?
Yeah.
Saints were up by two touchdowns, yes, or something.
I think in the NFC championship game.
So maybe Danny was only a couple of, I think that they filmed the season only 2 months after the Super Bowl.
So he probably was fresh in his mind, yes, especially that he's a football guy.
All right. Speaking of, we talked about Survivor almost 2 hours. Let us talk about the Survivor Fantasy Football League. Okay.
I think it's worth mentioning.
Yeah. All right, Dominic.
Let me pull up some stats. Yeah, here
pull
real
up
quick.
Some stats. We play in the Rotten Coconuts Survivor Fantasy Football League. It's a real parody year.
Yeah,
nobody's running away with this thing.
I'm looking at the standings. Right, you have Joe Mena being the Ricard of the season.
Even perennial doormat Kellen Bechtold is 4-9.
Right.
It's been a banner year for Kellen.
And tell me if my math is here is wrong here, Rob. I think I guaranteed myself into the playoffs, mm-hmm, and Joe did. But there's four more spots. Mm-hmm. You, Shane Powers, and Sarah Lacina are 7-6.
Mm-hmm.
But you're still not locked in.
Yeah.
Because there's so many 6-7 records. And they may have more points forward if you guys end up having the same record.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, there's a lot of cases where there's only two guarantees, but there's probably out of the four remaining spots, maybe seven remaining players can still get in.
Yeah.
So that's an interesting scenario here.
Yeah. Okay. It was a real turnaround for my team that Jonathan Taylor was really the key guy for me. I think I was 0-3. From there have come back. I made a huge blunder when I made like a major fantasy football investment in somebody on the waiver wire, and I can't even remember the guy's name. I spent like
$75.
I spent like $75 out of the 100 on the Bears. Right? People are like, okay, he's going to be the starter for the Bears. I'm like, I'm desperate here, and I went all in. That guy gave me nothing, and I ended up like doing it. But then I had no money. I have no dollars left, and I'm really without a tight end. Yeah,
gotta keep a few bucks around.
Gotta keep a few bucks. It's like an interesting wrinkle in this league. You need a dollar to make a transaction.
Absolutely. That's like Survivor. You know the rules ahead of time.
I know.
As long as you know the rules ahead of time, you gotta play the game.
And then Robert Woods went out for the year, and it's like, yeah, I need guys off the waiver wire, and I don't have the dollars.
And I mean, we can be honest about my team, right? Yeah. It's terrible, but I'm lucky. I've been playing people who have been happen to be having poor weeks.
Yeah.
I got a wild record.
I won a real pillow fight against Sarah Lacina a couple of weeks ago, like 88-70.
There's been a lot of, I think Shane got the shaft by like 0.3 or something one week. But it's been fun. It's fun because we keep, we get to do something outside of Survivor while staying in kind of inside Survivor, right? Mm-hmm. It's fun. It's good. And we didn't really have a big season of smack talk, which I'm surprised. But I think people are focused on really winning. I think that it's more about the W than talking smack. So, and like I said, it's getting tight, and we'll see how this plays out. But I don't forecast myself winning because my team's terrible. Mm-hmm. But I'm in second place. Okay. I live in second place, Rob.
Look, better than living in third place.
Okay. I don't know. All right. We'll see.
And then, Dom, we got a question from Josh Wiggler, who wants to know final predictions for the Succession finale. I don't know if you want to go full spoilers here, but how about this? Could we cast the Succession with Survivor 41 characters?
Ooh. I think Josh asked me something similar to this when I podcast. Well,
I love when you go on the Succession post-show recap with Josh Wiggler.
It's fun. But the thing with me, when I do those, I am all on like these wild theories.
Mm-hmm.
and none of them ever play out. So it's like I'm just having my own little world of fun.
Yeah.
And they never play out.
Okay.
And like I said, I love the show. I feel like this season's got a lot of back and forth. I really thought, and if we're just touching on it really quick, I thought that
don't
Kendall,
don't do full spoilers. Like,
Okay.
Just thematically. Okay. What's a catchier song? The Succession theme music or the Shantham?
I tell you what, the Succession theme song would be great music for
Survivor.
That's
the evil theme song that I hum in my head.
I could see someone like devising a plan and they like hone in on that person and having the Succession music in the background, because it definitely does sound devious and like they're, It's such an evil show, isn't it? Like an evil family.
Okay. All right. So here's my, let's start with, okay. Ricard is Logan Roy.
Okay. I see a parallel there.
Okay. At this point in time, because everybody's like, oh, what's Ricard doing? Oh, where's Ricard? We got to take out Ricard. Nobody can ever beat Ricard. You can't come at Ricard. And then
the rest of the siblings.
Yes. And then is Xander Kendall?
Yeah. That's as close as you're
people don't
get.
Take him seriously. He's got like the Kendall voice.
Right. And Heather is the Connor Roy, right?
Heather is Connor. Okay.
Right,
why?
Kind of like not in the mix, but there.
And she's like, well, right? What about me? I'm polling at 1% to win this game. Right. That's exactly. They did an Instagram poll the other night. All right. She's Connor. Then so
Deshaun would be,
I think for Deshaun is Roman.
I see Deshaun being more, Tom Wamsgans.
Okay.
Yeah, because a little bit of on the fence, mm-hmm. A little bit of on the fenceness, right? Again, not to get in spoilers, but one day Tom is team Logan, next day he's potentially considering team Kendall, and I feel like that Deshaun had a little bit of conflict on which team to go with. So I'm going to give Deshaun the Tom parallel there.
Yeah. Erica, I think, is Shiv, that she's the one like, hey, don't you think that, you know, it's time for a woman to lead this company? Don't you think woman should be the face of this?
Yeah. And let's get back to Erica. Cause
I'm tired of being underestimated.
Right.
And I'm a lion.
That's a perfect one. That's probably the best comparison, right? In the Survivor world versus the Succession world, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think we did pretty good job. Who else? Is anyone else out there?
Who else? We're down to the final, the final five. We'd have to go into people that aren't in the game anymore.
Yeah, no. Is there a Greg on Survivor this season?
Who is cousin Greg? Is it Brad? Is Brad the cousin Greg? JD.
JD might be the cousin Greg. And that's all due respect, because I love cousin Greg.
Yeah.
Right? Who doesn't love cousin Greg?
Okay, great. That's the
most colorful, colorful character.
For sure. okay. And then did we have a Roman then?
Yeah. Roman's just too dirty and evil to give a comparison to.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Mm-hmm. Especially after the last episode, my dad, where he sent the wrong text out, which was phenomenal.
Right. Right. Yes, that was botched idol play, would you say?
All right. That's a good comparison, right? accidentally sending the text to the wrong person. Yes. Playing an idol on the wrong person. Let's call it that, right?
Sure.
Okay. So many people are like, what? Yeah, they probably left by now, right?
That's why we saved it for the end and they turn it off. Okay. Well, Dom, this was so fun to catch up. This time flew by. Was there anything else from your notes that you want to make sure that we say on the record?
The problem is, like I said, we probably lost everyone at this point. No. So is it worth mentioning? There's probably a few diehards still sticking around.
Yeah.
I talked about the smells of the fire. Wait, hold on. Mm-hmm. I do just want to see if there's anything else. No. No. Oh, one last thing about the jury. And this has been going on for seasons and seasons. This is an editing trick, right? Like, every time a player was voted out from the week before and they come into the game sitting on the jury, they always like hone in on that person looking really pissed. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. I just did the rewatch. It just was so funny.
Who was looking so angry on the jury?
Well, like, even if you go back to last episode's jury, when Shan came in, she has just like this, Deshaun, explain yourself. But then he flipped it and went to this whole other world. And then she kind of was more accepting of it. But even Liana comes in this week and she just looks really pissed.
Oh, that's what you have to you don't know anything about sitting on a jury, but you gotta come in. You gotta come in and you're like, I'm really.
But you know what it is? Let me tell you what I compare it to.
What?
Like busting out in a poker tournament.
Okay.
Okay. Some people, when they bust out in a poker tournament, are so sour. Oh, how could you play that hand? How could you play those cards? And they just leave pissed and they go on with their day pissed. That's not me. So if I feel like if I was on the jury, I'm like, I lose the hand. And even if I got beaten by a really poor hand that someone shouldn't have been calling within the beginning, my response is, that's poker. Those are the people you're going to get in this game sometimes that play silly hands. And if you can't know that going into this game, you don't deserve playing this game. So I try to leave with grace.
Yes.
Now, again, circumstances will determine. Right. So you try. I think people should try to leave with grace. Look, everyone's allowed to be pissed. I'm not saying that. You're not. You are allowed to look angry on the jury. I just found it funny. I find it funny that after all this time,
I think that's how people feel like this. This is how I'm supposed to be.
Yeah, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps. I just and that's not even necessarily true 100% because there are a lot of people that come into the jury after just being booted that actually come in with grace and a smile on their face.
Yeah, but
and
those people have been day drinking.
And voting. Voting while intoxicated should be outlawed. I'm not talking from experience, but maybe I am.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But anywho, voting while intoxicated is not fair.
Yeah. Dominic, I wanted to ask you also about that. You know, we have another Long Island representative on this season. What did you make of Tiffany?
Oh, she's fantastic.
Yes.
I feel bad because I think she invited me to come to her one of her earlier shows. Mm-hmm. Viewing parties, and I'm like, I committed to
wake up
to
very early in the morning.
It's so bad. Yeah. It's so bad. Which is why we're doing this podcast on Saturday morning, right? I wake up like I'm hitting like 3:30 a.m. on the alarm clock, and then getting in the door sometimes at like 6:30 p.m. Mm-hmm. It's just not possible.
Mm-hmm.
Just I can't be effective.
Yes.
And so you pick and choose, like we've been talking about. You pick and choose what you can and can't pull off, and you do the best you can.
Mm-hmm.
And but I love Tiffany. I know I'm going to meet her. She lives probably 20 minutes away from me. We're probably going to get, maybe we'll do dinner as, you know, couples.
Wow, that, what a fun night.
We haven't set it up, but I'm sure we'll do it. Because she seems very, you know, she's Long Island.
Yeah.
So that's an easy thing. That's an easy thing for us. So I'm looking forward to that.
Dom, do you have anything that you're working on that you want to tell people to check out besides that Off the Island with Dom and Wen?
No, not really. Just doing a lot of cooking lately. And
what are you making on the what do you call that? The outdoor grill?
The one that I built is like a, and by the way, Stephen Fishback, I don't know if he cares that I mentioned this. Okay. He just purchased himself a miniature version of what I built. His is more
really?
Of a,
he's
already texting me questions.
Yes, what is he going to do?
So the grill itself is known as what's called a Santa Margarita grill, in which it sits
I love that Jimmy Buffett song.
Oh. Is it called Santa Margarita Grill?
Margaritaville.
Margaritaville. Oh yeah. Sorry. Gotcha. Okay. So it's anytime you have a grill that sits over real open fire, all right, but has the ability to raise and lower. Okay. So he's got one that's like a minute. He purchased one. I don't know if it came in yet, but it's the size of like a maybe a 16-inch pit. which you put fire and you could use it as just a fire pit. Or if you put the attachment on, he has a little mini grill that sits on top of it. And I told him, great purchase, perfect purchase, especially to get started in this very weird world of something that happens to a lot of people when they hit our age and are trying to find safe new hobbies. We call them safe until we burn the house down.
Yeah.
But I like to think that they're safe hobbies, you know? So, for me, what ended up happening real quick, Rob, is COVID hit and you basically binge all these TV shows because there's nothing else to do because you're out of work. Well, I was out of work for a little bit, but you can't go out. You can't go out. Right. So I had to figure out new ways to find things to do at home. Mm-hmm. And I was always a barbecue guy, enthusiast, and appreciated the primal style of cooking and smoking meat and all these things. So I decided to take on this project and I did it and it was going very well. And then I got to this dead end and I'm like, damn, I need some serious manpower and some creative thinking. And I called my guy Wendell and him and the crew came. We finished it off. So that was that. And then in addition to that, I bought this Traeger, which is a legit smoker. So you smoke meat. So this is things like if you have 12 to 18 hours to kill, you can do some really nice project with food and you'd be surprised how much better food tastes when it's cooked low and slow over open flame. And this is the world I live in now because it's a new hobby. It's like I said, it's safe and fun. And I've always been a culinary guy. I worked in an Italian restaurant for 7 years back in my 20s. So I learned a few things back in the day. Why not? Right. Why stay in one world when you have all these different places you can go in life?
So that's right.
That's where I'm sitting now. And I'm doing a lot of poker I've been playing lately.
Have you been cooking anything from the Boston Rob Mariano cookbook?
I have not. We exchange ideas occasionally. I don't say really exchange ideas. We were talking about grilling for about an hour on the phone a few months back. Mm-hmm. But I tell you what I'd like to get into is one day, and I'd actually like to invite other cooking enthusiasts into this world because a big Survivor meal for people is, you know, there's two things that are big things. One of them is
shrimp
called, shrimp, the hell, what is that?
Here it's a thing. Yeah.
I don't know about this. Well, I think we named one of them as Cocoa Pops. Again, I'm sure different seasons have different names for them.
But you basically coconut rice or
the rice. Yeah. This is the simple dicing of coconut into very small pieces.
Yeah, coconut putting popcorn.
Popcorn.
Yeah,
you put it in a cast iron. You burn the hell out of it, and you also add a little bit of salt water from the actual ocean to give it that salty flavor, and the oil from the coconut acts as the butter. And people that have not actually had this would be baffled to realize how similar the flavor of this is to actual popcorn. It's like as close as anything you're going to get.
Yeah.
So outside of this, I want to challenge people to make a batch of that. But also there's the rice, which we've heard and you've heard Boston Rob talk about, give me the crispies and Phil saying, I want crispies. Mm-hmm. That is actually a delicacy that came like from the Persian world many years ago. It's a dish called tadik. I think I'm saying that right. And it's where you actually cook rice at the bottom layer of a pot and you add oil to give it the crisp and you add spices. Most of the time they use saffron. And the goal is that once it's cooked, you take the pot and flip it upside down. And once you pull that pot off it, you have this beautiful
cake. Yeah.
But if you could have the perfect golden crispy brown crispiness, like they talk about on Survivor, this is like a dish that's like a delicacy in the Middle East that's very well known. So I'm trying to perfect those two items. And like I said, maybe we'll make a thing of it and see if people can present the coconut popcorn.
British Survivor Bake Off.
The great Bake Off of Survivor items to cook. And I want to see if people research the concept of cooking tadik, which is this crispy rice dish. I think it would be great and fun. And it still stays in that world of Survivor while also trying out these new fun things in the culinary
world. So, Dom, have you considered ever putting together, you have all these recipes now, some sort of a the Dom Abate Survivor Cookbook?
Yeah, I mean, sure, these ideas have floated in and out of the brain, but I don't want to do it half-assed, and I don't want to do it just because it's the, like, in other words, I can't just do a cookbook. I'd have to have some special element to it. You know what I mean? So I think I'm playing around with that idea. But until I really pinpoint, in other, it can't just be a cookbook. I don't think that's cool enough.
How could it be more than a cookbook?
I think you can add an element. How does it? How does this dish relate to something? Maybe, you know, and each page you flip will have a story behind it, perhaps. Or maybe in addition to off the island with Dom and Wen, when we do go visit maybe a past Survivor player, maybe while we're there, we cook a dish. And maybe that dish is the dish that's presented in this little...
Go to Stephen Fishbeck's house.
We're going to Stephen Fishbeck's house. We're going to do this Santa Maria Grill, and we're going to cook something on that. We'll figure it out.
Okay.
We're going to have fun.
All right.
We're going to have fun. We're, the possibilities are endless, and there's a lot of time now nowadays to do things.
Yes. All right. Well, Dom, this was incredible. Thank you so much. I appreciate you taking some time away from the family, making some time to talk Survivor with us. You are such a great person to bounce ideas off of. So this was incredible for me. I don't know how it was for you.
Always love catching up with you, Rob, even though we text back and forth all the time. This is a better element. We get to bounce, you know, the latest and greatest ideas off each other. I do want to say once again, though, this season really has been a powerful season. I think it's important. I think the timing of it and I think we're really lucky that the conversation from last episode came up when it did, how it did. I love the all the different perspectives from all the players and in that moment. Again, I don't want to keep going back to, I mean, it's important enough to readdress, but I think the timing and everything has been great this season. And I look forward to seeing how the seasons progress. Obviously, we want full integration of everything to work out in a way that's positive. We never want people to fear that they're coming into this game with baggage and can't do certain things because of a certain situation. The game and life in general, people should be able to live and do things without this baggage. So I feel like this really is an historic moment in the game, as in life and reality and those things. So yeah. Just a good time to be in the Survivor world, and great talking to you. And I look forward to kicking your ass in fantasy football.
If I make it in the playoffs, I'm in dire straits this week. I don't know. We'll see. ESPN says I have a 78% chance to make the playoffs, but I haven't crunched the numbers yet. That sounds high.
You can't trust you can't trust those sites. 78%. Who are you playing this week?
I am playing, is it Brendan? Chris Hammonds, I think.
Yeah, that guy hasn't even set his lineup anymore.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, so.
Someone might have to send him a text.
No, leave him alone.
Don't do it.
Okay, all right. Dom, where can people keep up with you?
Same old places. You know, nowhere.
Okay. Will you be watching the Succession finale live?
Probably not.
Okay.
Yeah. But I won't say how, but I do have the ability to watch. I think I'm losing you. I think the computer's cracking down. Okay. So I don't know. We'll see.
All right.
But let's say goodbye here because I don't want
to
lose you.
Let's say goodbye to Dom Abate. Thank you so much for listening. Check out that Mike Bloom podcast. Kirsten McInnes on the Patreon feedback show on Monday night. Thank you so much for listening. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye. Support for this podcast comes from our friends over at Geico. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do, and it's hard work, but you know what's easy? Bundling your policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too. You're busy enough. Go to geico.com and get a quote and see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do. and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia, movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.